We walk into rooms and we know. We know what they are thinking. We know what they expect. A fat woman, what does that mean? I'm a stereotype. They think I will be clumsy, unkempt, insecure. I'm something to mock, laugh at. No one blinks an eye when my intelligence is questioned or my experience unacknowledged. To them, no. To you, my whole being is defined by the largeness of my body. I'm expected to earn the good favor of those around me. I have something to make up for, something to apologize for. My largeness gawked at, my body a topic of conversation. If I'm confident, I'm an anomaly. If I'm insecure, the pity and reassurances are endless. People can't help but notice me. Their constant gaze watches my every move, what I eat, what I'm wearing. They stare in amazement at my capacity to walk with my head held high. As if I have nothing to be proud of, my humanity is dismissed. My confidence is an inspiration, but one that only makes them feel better about themselves. They may not even question the thoughts they have about me. This is simply how it's meant to be, because I'm a part of their story, not someone who exists on their own. I am a fat woman. Come on, you know what that means. I'm a symbol of the lack of control. I'm something I should be ashamed of. I'm something you've become ashamed of. My existence reminds you to do everything you can to not become me. At least I don't look like her runs through your head. I'm entirely too visible, yet the real me, the me beyond my body, is invisible. I live in a world that moralizes my body. My success is still a failure, my presence still a debt. I am a fat woman. Must I earn your favor or beg for your attention? Do I not deserve it simply because of the large softness of my body? Constantly, I'm aware of the pressure of having to prove myself, but only in the ways you want me to. I am a fat woman. You know what that means. I'm defined. I'm in a box, easily dismissed and devalued because of what can I offer this world? I am a fat woman. This is the lens through which I am seen. If you don't understand this, listen, question, don't speak for me. Because in spite of all this, I am a fat woman, gloriously, majestically, exactly what this world needs. My name is Melissa.
Hello, everyone. I am Sassy Latte.
And this is Body Justice.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to our show. That was a caption that Melissa wrote for Instagram about a year ago. And we just, tying into all of our shows, we feel so passionate about storytelling. We want to tell some of our personal stories as well as the stories of other people around us who have sort of overlapping experiences.
Yeah, so I definitely wrote that because I wanted to kind of identify the ways in which, or the way that I feel like coming into a new space or coming into any space, and just this idea, whether it be real or not, but most likely it is real, it's something that I feel and that I think that a lot of other fat people can identify with. So we really wanted to take today to kind of focus on this idea of what does it mean in our work? What's the difference between this idea of self-esteem and self-love versus combating systemic oppression when it comes to body justice?
I think that a lot of people tend to conflate the two because I think on the surface they look the same. For a lot of people experiencing self-esteem, they do have like some poor body image issues and things like that. And some of that can overlap with people who are experiencing systemic oppression. But I think sort of the genesis of that poor body image, one might lie within interpersonal dynamics and relationships. So maybe if your family isn't treating you fairly, or if you're in an unhealthy romantic relationship. But the difference between that and systemic oppression is the genesis of poor body image as it relates to systemic oppression is that those negative ideas are reinforced in mass media. They're upheld by the government and laws or the lack of protection. And so it's no longer just an interpersonal thing. Suddenly society is kind of turning those ideas onto you and you begin to internalize them. So like poor self-esteem and experiencing systemic oppression and kind of the symptoms of that sort of mirror one another, but they aren't the same. And that's why I love what Melissa wrote, because what Melissa's describing isn't something that necessarily comes from her or necessarily is only rooted within her personal experiences. It's actually echoed through society, and it's sort of thrust upon Melissa.
So I actually have my master's in women's and gender studies, and I ended up writing my thesis on this, basically kind of delving into body positivity, the movement, and also this idea of what does it mean to be fat and how do we actually identify the issues that we should want to address, and also recognize where this movement or the work that we do around fat people and around the fat experience is often lacks in actually being effective. So part of that is I was reading a lot of queer theorists, and I read Judith Butler, and she has this idea in one of her essays talking about who are the people. And I think that this is something that really like resonated with me, because she talks about how when we create the world and we say who we are, we identify who we're creating our society for, we're also saying who we're creating, we're not creating it for. So what happens is when you say, okay, we are going to make chairs a certain size, or like the standard for the standard or the kind of body that we have in mind when we create these systems and we build things, and when we like say that's who we're going to create it for, we're then signaling to everyone else that doesn't fit into that they aren't the norm, or they aren't the people that society is going to keep in mind. And I think as a fat person, like that's really, really, really apparent. Also, you know, I think that can kind of manifest itself in so many different ways, and based on different ways that your body looks. But in all those forms, we are told, and like what we're signaling to ourselves and to each other, that there is a normal and then there's an abnormal. And the world is created for the normal people. And that usually looks like thin white people and who are healthy, who are productive members of society in the terms that we believe that they should be. And what happens is that it then like creates this systemic oppression in little forms through microaggressions, through big, like, inaccessibility to certain groups. It tells us, okay, you have something that you have to make up for. You have something that you have to recognize that you aren't the people, that you're the people that are outside the limits of society or outside of people that we need to serve. Instead, you have to fit into you have to try everything you need to do to try to fit into what we need, what we are telling you is the normal type of person.
Yeah, I think that that's really fascinating, because I think when people think about systemic oppression, a lot of times people think of systemic oppression as something that is thrust upon us. I think people don't think about exclusion. So I think that's a really fascinating concept, because when we create a standard, and yeah, it is typically the standard that we think about oftentimes is a thin, white, middle to upper middle class person, able-bodied, cishet, or cisgender, sorry, and heterosexual. The world kind of is built upon some of these things that are physical and other things that are just social constructs, like gender is a social construct, race is a social construct, and we've framed all of these ideas about who's valuable in society and who's worthy and who's heroic and who we should believe based around all of these ideas about the worth of individual humans or collections of humans, populations, based on these constructs that we've kind of built. And a lot of these constructs, honestly, have been built by dominant populations within society. So if you find yourself outside of that dominant group, what you end up running into are all of these sort of like institutions that are meant to exclude you from either progressing in life, from feeling protected in life, but also I think they, in a lot of ways that people don't talk about, is that it really, systemic oppression functions in such a way that it means to sort of never allow you to build yourself up. I recently got into a conversation with somebody that didn't think it was bizarre that most of mass media is full of white people. I made a post on Instagram. You guys know I love my social media. You guys know I vlog online. I do a lot of microblogging on Instagram. And I wrote a caption, or I posted pictures of these beautiful black women. And I was captioned it as, imagine a world where this is what you saw on TV. You know, this is all you saw on advertisements. This is who you saw selling you things, who you saw selling you the truth. And you learned to love people who look like this and to trust people who look like this. And society was built to protect people who look like this. And I got a lot of backlash from white people. And they were just like, I don't understand why you feel the need to be divisive and to specifically focus on black people. And I said, you know, well, if this seems confrontational to you, imagine growing up in a world where you never saw this, where there is so little representation of people who live inside of marginalized bodies. There's so little representation that it almost seems shocking to see a fat person, to see a disabled person who is not just the token person in a wheelchair, but is functioning within society and in leadership roles. Imagine seeing black people everywhere that you see white people. That would completely change who you think the world is meant for and who you are as a person yourself. And if you're offended by just imagining that world, I think that that really tells us something about who this world was built for and who was meant to be left out of it.
So we just want to kind of talk about representation in this sense, like how important that is and kind of how revolutionary that is for someone who, for me, who is fat. I really got intrigued. Like, I was just so intrigued by the fact of just seeing fat people post pictures online. I remember that those moments and I was being like, oh my gosh, like you can tell they feel confident and you can tell that they're having a good time, they're not standing in the back. They're not hiding themselves. And that alone was super revolutionary for me.
Oh my God. Like, that's actually seeing you is what, like, was a pivotal like moment for me, because I had to stalk you first because it really messed with my mind. I think that's why social media is so important, because it gives us all an opportunity to represent ourselves. But seeing Melissa kind of be free and be confident is something that you do not see fat bodies doing. You just don't.
Not at all.
There's an archetype of what fat people are allowed to do.
And like, we grew up that way. Like, I think like, even today, you see it more. So, like, the difference between how many fat people you see, like, in the world and in advertisements, representation of them between now and even 5 years ago is, like, astonishing. Like, I grew up in a world, spent most of my life in a world where the only representations of fat people were, like, having to do with the obesity crisis on the like 5 o'clock news, and they never had any heads because their heads were always cut off. But they, you know, you saw their whole body. And like that literally was the representation I saw of people that looked like me. Everyone else, like all I ever saw was like people, the women around me and the men around me being like, I don't want to be in a picture, or, oh, I don't want to see that picture. I never saw anyone just like own and take up the space that they had, that they did take up, and own their bodies and just exist in them. But more than that, like feel good in them. And that was super revolutionary for me. Like that's something that's kind of crazy that it's only a recent phenomenon that we're starting to see that.
I don't think people really acknowledge, or we're not taught to notice those things. I can't remember where I read it, but there's a lot of writings about societal privilege. And one of the things that when you grow up in a body of privilege, you're really kind of blinded to the ways in which other people are excluded or not represented. And so I always try to explain to people when I'm having like political discussions, all of these like bigoted ideas and these like negative archetypes that we have about different body marginalizations, we are all fed the exact same messages. The only difference between somebody like me and somebody who is thin and white is that I am hurt by things like racism and, you know, by fat phobia, whereas somebody who's thin and white are not hurt by those things. But I also receive all of the same messages about body marginalization and the archetypes and the negativity that a thin white person does, only they benefit from those negative messages that harm me. So they are less likely to notice how profoundly destructive the lack of representation can be to somebody's body image and also to somebody's identity development as they grow. So I agree, definitely growing up, there was like the fat friend or the fat bully. I definitely remember seeing people with their heads cut off because we love to objectify fat bodies, where you see fatness, but you never see a whole person and you never get to like connect to that whole person. So seeing Melissa kind of like wear fashionable clothes, like I would have never in my life, I didn't even know where to buy fat clothes before finding body positivity online and people sharing that. And so like I tell people, you know, it's so important to sort of question our reality, because we're told that the normal is to be thin and the reality is that you should be thin. And when you start to question that and you look at like the entire world, when you actually stop being on your phone, stop watching TV and you walk around the world, there are fat people leading, you know, classrooms and loving their children and shopping in stores, maybe not for clothes, but, you know, we're walking around the malls and we're at the parks with our kids. We're going to movie theaters. We're traveling. So there is no like shortage of fat bodies just because we have no representation otherwhere, or like elsewhere.
Yeah. And I think that what happened, I think when you don't have representation, you dehumanize someone. When you only see them in certain ways and the representation of them is only conveyed to you as this is who they are, this body, this kind of person is defined by how whatever parameters that the world has created, and What word am I thinking of? That's influenced by, like I said, how we set up the world, the spaces, how we set up the spaces in our life. Airplanes who charge extra for people of size. It's set up by the way we look at people or the way we talk about food or the way that we have moralized or created this story about the health of fat people. And we've made their body a disease. And I think that that impacts all of this to then say like, okay, this fat person is someone that we understand exactly what they are. I in my research, I came across a couple of quotes that I kind of wanted to read. So this is an excerpt from my thesis. And I said, in the prevailing narrative of American culture, fat women don't have individual identities. The narrative flattens all that they are into one general fat woman stereotype. Not only this, as Petra Coopers argues in her essay, Fatties on Stage, the voices of women our size are stripped from them. As fat, and this is a quote, as fat in contemporary society strips away agency and subjectivity, fat takes away the voice and acquires its own vocabulary, she explains. And a vocabulary of the fat female body tells not of agency, but of loss of control. All this culminates in a very discouraging, dehumanizing, and objectifying narrative of the fat woman. The question that we should be asking is, if our bodies are read against our will, how do we perform our specific and individualized identity? And I think that's why that question is so revolutionary. Being able to say, I don't have to be defined by my body, was something that all of a sudden it was liberating, you know? It was like, oh, I'm not always going to have to be trying to become smaller. That's not my goal in life. And it never really was. Like, that wasn't the entirety of my existence. It was so much more, my life encompassed so much more, but the way that I was seen and the way that I saw my place in the world was as a constant, like, I'm apologizing, I'm needing to change, I need to earn favor in this world because I'm not what is normal, I'm not who matters in this world, and I'm always going to be less than because of that.
I think that those conversations also become really complicated for people who have sort of like intersecting marginalized identities. I think my experience sometimes is a little bit different because even if I can, for lack of better words, sort of forgive myself and wrap myself around the size of my body, I still have to deal with like racism and, you know, conversations around gender and, you know, the binary and the expectations that kind of lie within that. So I think that sometimes we also still have to talk about, you know, just having intersectional representation as well. I always felt like that was something that was missing from the body positivity movement, online especially. I always felt like, first of all, the space somehow that was born out of fat acceptance became dominated by thin white women who were using, like, fat women, objectifying fat bodies as like, it's okay to be fat as long as I'm not fat. I just need to know that it's okay to be.
Yeah, like I talked about that in the caption that I read at the beginning of this episode. You know, this whole idea that you're celebrating me because I'm an inspiration to you so that you can then be like, if she feels good about her body, then I should. And I can feel good. And like, that is something that I came up against all the time. Like, yeah, you feel good and you gave me this inspiration to now you're a part of my story, which is great. But like, again, it's still objectifying me.
I don't think that that's great. I think for me, that's a fat phobic microaggression.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I feel like if the value of fat bodies in your life is only meant to inspire you to come to terms with your trauma or your eating disorder, you're not valuing fat people in your life. You are using their existence, stripped of their humanity, as a poster for you to get over your personal hurdles. There's no connection there. There's no respect. There certainly isn't any body justice because none of those people who use fat bodies and fat narratives that way show up when it comes to fat politics and making sure that fat people are protected and safe.
And it reinforces the idea that fat bodies are less valuable. Like, it's not actually challenging that at all. And if that's what is the goal of the work that fat activists are doing, or I think that we're missing the point and we're actually harming ourselves in the process because we're basically saying, yeah, no, I'm supposed to be devalued, instead of asserting our own agency and asserting our own value and asserting our own humanity outside of our bodies and within our bodies, you know? So I actually agree that it's actually a terrible thing. But that's literally what it felt like, is like how I felt about my body only mattered when it was a part of someone else's story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
But I also think...
And fit into the narrative that worked for them and that made them feel good.
Yeah. Right? No, I think a lot of people internalize that as well. And I think because when you lived inside of a marginalized body, you only understand yourself through a privileged lens. And so, like, I experienced that, especially, like, I talk about race specifically because... with my experiences with body positivity, I always felt like nobody wanted to address that. And I also felt like fat Black people within body positivity always felt like they had to separate their fatness from their Blackness. But living in the world, navigating the world, I'm always both of those things simultaneously. I'm never just one here and then something else over there. I'm always that all the time, both things. But I think that, like, the ways in which we come to understand ourselves and the ways in which we come to navigate spaces are so deeply informed by how people who navigate society with a sense of privilege tell us how to be. So I always felt like fat people within the body positivity moment, like, felt proud to be an inspiration. I felt like disabled people loved having their bodies put on display as disability porn, for lack of better words, and how Black, you know, people who were being shared on all these different platforms and even in mass media, like, you know, getting articles and publicity. I always felt like they had the sense of pride of, like, if I can be objectified in this way, that means that I'm accepted and that means that I am living up to this standard and I'm succeeding, when truly tokenization is never, in my opinion, a success. It's really just another microaggression that we've internalized as a good thing because we only understand ourselves and we only learn to develop our identity via that lens.
Yeah, and it's like all of a sudden I'm the good fatty, you know? Like,
oh my gosh, you have to explain what the good fatty is. So there's a term, the good fatty, and I'll let Melissa explain it because I know most people are like, what's that mean?
Well, like, the good fatty is someone who serves a purpose to those around them, who is constantly doing the things that fat people should do, like being on diets and working out and, you know, being a little bit self-deprecating, but, like, not too much and not weirdly, you know, be supportive. And anyway, the good fatty is just someone that's, like, constantly apologizing for their body and constantly saying, like, you know, this is just temporary. I'm working on this. I'm doing everything I can to not be this way. And I'm going to be positive about it no matter what. And I think that you see so much of that in movements online and in representations of fat people, even to this day. Conversely, there's the idea of the bad fatty who's just like, I really don't care. and I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And I'm going to eat what I want to eat. But I think that, you know, I am both.
I don't think
ways.
That. Well, I think, like, that's kind of, it's hard to be one or the other. I mean, the human existence is a complicated one. And I think that we lie to ourselves when we say that we're not affected by things. I would be, you know, a complete liar if I didn't say that, like, white supremacy has a very strict hold on my body and the way that I choose to navigate the world. So regardless of how I feel in my heart of hearts and what I do on Instagram and, you know, the face that I put on for people, I was still, you know, brought up with these ideas about who I'm allowed to be and who I should aspire to be. So even if I feel confident as a fat person and I love shopping and I love photographing my body, you know, there's always going to be that story that I've heard my whole life about how I'm supposed to feel about my body. And I can combat that actively, but it doesn't mean that story ever goes anywhere. I think that it's sort of interwoven into like the fabric of my identity. And so it's a process of unlearning those things, but I don't think that those things that we've initially learned ever really goes anywhere.
Yeah, I think about this a lot because I'm in law school, and so I'm, you know, working at a law firm, and I have different areas of my life where there are unspoken rules of what how you should dress or whatever. So I think about this all the time, like this idea of professionalism and how I like while on Instagram or something in my regular life, it would be totally fine if my like belly is like, you know, not like, what do you say? Is it snatched or like whatever it is? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and, but I feel like I feel the pressure when I'm at school or when I'm at my job to, not look unkempt. So I like wear shapewear, and I feel like I have to, because I feel like if my body looks, like it's, if my fat is left to hang whatever way it hangs, like that's automatically perceived as unprofessional or yeah. as lazy or as all these things that come with it. And I feel like if I show that I'm like trying to fit my body into some certain kind of shape, into some certain way that makes everyone else uncomfortable, makes everyone else comfortable. Then I'm seen as like the good fatty. I'm doing what society wants me to do.
But I think that there's, I don't know, for me personally, I don't judge those moments because I think there's a lot of honor in choosing to survive, and that's about mm-hmm. survival. I think that I also think it's really fascinating the things that we do as not to seem unkempt. I have two daughters, and my oldest daughter has the more kinky, like 4BC, I don't even know the letters and numbers that describe the curl pattern, but she has kinkier hair. And she was talking about wanting to wear a messy bun. And I just thought to myself, you can't do that, because a messy bun for our hair looks unkempt. It looks dirty. It looks like I don't take care of you. There's a whole different narrative for you as a Black child doing these that doesn't apply to white people. And I feel the same way about our bodies. Like a belly, like, come on. If a thin person wants to have their flat belly out, that's cute, right? You know what I mean? Just a sliver or something. Like, there's a tasteful way to do it. But like, is there a tasteful way for a fat person to show belly? Ever. I did not grow up fat. And we'll talk about that more, like the differences between those experiences. But I used to literally never cover my six pack. I went to work with my belly out, y'all. I never wore a whole shirt. And my parents never like saw me with a whole shirt. Like that was just kind of like my vibe. But the moment that I became fat, and I still wanted to wear those clothes, it suddenly became trashy. It suddenly became nasty, or like I didn't care about myself. And I had to like really question that, because I'm the same person, you know, and I want to care for my body and dress my body the same way. But suddenly that meant something different just based on the sheer size of my body.
I think it's funny that we've been talking about this. So we, as marginalized people, or as part of us living this experience, where we're recognizing we are not the normal people. We're not the people. We're not the people that the society has in mind when they're creating it. So much of that is doing things or not doing things because of how we're perceiving or how we know other people will then would judge us. Like, we're literally doing things in our life so that we avoid judgment, and that in and of itself is, I don't want to be seen. I can't be seen. I'm trying to go below the radar. And that is a kind of existence that really like buries deep within you. And it really does change the way you live and experience and exist in this world. And all of a sudden you don't feel like you can take those risks. You don't feel like you can, it affects your success. It affects how you interact with other people. It affects the risks you're going to take in life, that how can that not affect your job performance? How can that not, and that becomes very real, and that becomes very systemic. That translates into being something that is actually contributing to systemic marginalization. And so while it's microaggressions, and while it's little things, but they build to create a way that we know we have to live in the world. And it builds to give us a mentality of what we can and we cannot do, or who we can and who we cannot be. You know, we were just talking about this, like, fashion had kind of, plus size fashion kind of had a moment, but we just came in today and we're like, oh gosh, all these stores that we used to go online to shop, because we still couldn't really go in person because there aren't really any, they're closing down, they're disappearing. You know, the small, much like the online shops that used to have plus size fashion or have plus size, like have those sizes, are paring everything down, taking it back. They don't ever have it in stores, and it's always twice as expensive. There are certain stores that are really terrible at this. It'll be the same exact dress as the, it'll be like, you know, extra small to XXL, and then you get into the plus size section, it's the same exact dress, and it's 2.5 times as much. And, you know, that's explained away for whatever reason.
I think that people don't look at things like that as microaggressions or exclusionary practices, but they are, because clothing is a resource. Like, we have to have clothing options. It goes beyond the quickie mart, no shoes, no shirt, no service. I mean, we literally have to clothe our bodies to navigate life. And knowing that we live inside of bodies that are already judged negatively, just in and of themselves, having certain clothing or at least access to options can really change the story about us that other people are creating. And so that becomes, it's like more about a survival as opposed to fashion. And I think like that's another thing that ties right back into what we were talking about, self-esteem versus systemic oppression. Self-esteem tells you that, hey, I just want some cute jeans. Those are in style. You know, maybe you feel a little bit bad if you can't wear what everybody else is wearing because you can't afford it, or you don't ever have time to go places that would require you wear that certain item. It's a whole different experience when those items are not available to you, or when they are specifically priced higher than what you can afford, knowing that you belong to a demographic of people who are less likely to receive a job in the first place, or more likely to be paid less than other people who have the same qualification.
And that's actual real research based, that comment's based on real research. And we know that people of different races are paid differently. We know that people of different sizes, fat people are less likely to get promoted, or and they're more likely to make less than their peers, and they're not as, they're seen as lazy and untrustworthy. These are because, simply because they're fat. And those are, that again is all reinforced by the, this idea of the world is not, we are not normal.
I think that when people are having a conversation about self-esteem versus self systemic oppression, they forget that self-esteem is something that kind of can change, and systemic oppression is far beyond our control. Like, no amount of therapy will ever stop people from being racist. Like, working on myself and how I feel about my blackness will never stop other people from being racist. And I think that like working on our fatness as well is never going to be something that's going to suddenly shape society in a way that will say, okay, fat people need more resources. Let's make sure that we're having furniture that is accessible. Let's make sure that we are offering clothing. Let's restructure our human resources to ensure that, you know, fat people and people of color are afforded, you know, equitable wages. Like, these are things that are not happening when we start to enjoy our bodies or connect to our bodies in a certain way. And that's the difference between self-esteem and systemic oppression. My self-esteem is fully intact. However, I'm still experiencing body oppression every single day, almost every moment of every day. And that's well beyond my control. And I also just wanted to touch back on something earlier Melissa talked about being judged. And I just wanted to like add on to that, that it's not only about judgment, it's also about violence. And I think that a lot of the ways in which we choose to protect ourselves by, for lack of better words, playing by the rules that are not really made for us, but if we try to play by them, we can protect ourselves. It starts with judgment, but that judgment almost always is sort of reinforced with some kind of aggression and some kind of actual violence. And whether that violence is physical or emotional, psychological, financial, or whether that violence is in the means of just being negligent. So like, for example, doctors refusing to treat fat people because they are trying to treat the size of our body before they treat our ailment. So that's not only about judgment, because that judgment is reinforced by some form of aggression, some form of violence that is beyond our control.
Absolutely. And I think that that's where people have a very limited understanding of how marginalization actually works and how it actually does compound to create injustice around around people's socioeconomic status, around their accessibility to the world, around their accessibility to healthcare, and feeling like they can be an advocate for themselves. So I think so much of how people want to address these issues is just by telling people to love themselves, or telling them like, oh, but you're confident, and oh, you should just feel better, like feel better in your body. And that is really problematic. And I think that I came back to this and I looked at this in my thesis, and I found this man, this theorist, who his name is Frank Ferretti, and he actually critiques therapy and this idea that that sometimes a lot of the ways in which it addresses anxiety, the trauma that people have, is really, really is it focuses on the individual, and it's basically telling them that their natural responses to the way that the world is treating them and the way that the world has created this experience for them, that those should be fixed through the way that they, through like in themselves and how they feel and react to it. Instead of actually recognizing that so much of that, so what actually should be done is we should focus on how trauma and marginalization is created, and, how and try to break those systems down and make it a better world for everyone. And so I said this in my thesis. I said, according to Ferretti's logic, when self-love is taught as the prescription for body negativity and body marginalization, the real reason bodies are marginalized is ignored, upholding the system altogether. So what happens is you're basically telling people to just be happier and deal with the world the way it is, and to have a different reaction. Then what is they're naturally reacting? You should be reacting to marginalization by anger, by feeling anxiety, and by being traumatized. Like, those are things that actually, those are real feelings. And you can't just slap a Band-Aid of self-love on it and be like, okay, it's all better now. That's never going to actually change anything. It's only going to reinforce and actually put more pressure on marginalized people to now not only deal with all of that, but, you know, be happy and get over it and at least make everyone else comfortable enough.
I think that you're right. I definitely feel like that also kind of just ties back into the lack of representation. I think that when you see yourself sort of visibly put out everywhere, you see reflections of yourself, and you see reflections of yourself as happy, you think that that's definitely a prescription for all issues, because that's the only thing that's being conveyed to you, because there's so little representation for people in marginalized bodies, specifically fat people. What gets lost in that sort of mindset is that we aren't navigating the world the way that everyone else is. And because of that, like, disparity, what might work for one person as a prescription to feeling safer and better in their bodies is never going to be something that works for us. And holding that expectation of us not only sort of pulls us away from our focus of disrupting these systems that harm us as a population of fat people, but it also puts an unnecessary pressure on us to engage in something that won't yield the same results for us as it does for thin people.
Absolutely. And that's that, when that becomes the goal, and it has become the goal of movements having to do with body justice, it actually maintains the system altogether and is really, really, really harmful. And I think that that's kind of where I want to come in and question that and push back at that and be like, how are we actually changing things? How are we actually trying to make the world a more just place for people who are in marginalized bodies? And self-love is not the answer to that. And portraying this idea of, like, you can just get over it is really, really, really awful. And it actually contributes to trauma. So I think that we definitely wanted to show that there is a difference between the way that you feel about your body and the way that the world sees it, and how you're going to exist and the experience you're going to have, regardless of how you feel about it in the world. And that's where we need to focus. That's where body justice needs to come in. And that needs to be the fight that we're having, not the fight of how do I feel better?
I also think it's really fascinating because we don't spend enough time on the really important question of, if you're objectifying people who look different from you so that you feel good about yourself, like, if a thin person needs a fat person or a disabled person or a black person to feel good about themselves, who are we supposed to use to feel good about ourselves? Doesn't it make you ever wonder that? I just kind of thought about that right now, thinking about the ways in which the body positivity movement has been taken over by thin white women who love to objectify everybody who's been othered by society. Well, if you're in the group that's being othered, and a privileged body is never something you're going to have, it's not something that's attainable to you, Who do we use for inspiration under those circumstances, considering the lack of representation, the dehumanization, systemic oppression, and all of those things? Where's the person that we get to put up on a pedestal that we can use to suddenly feel good about ourselves?
Yeah. And where do we feel like we can take that power back and also see the differences between ourselves and other people that look like us, and also the similarities? And where can we celebrate that, you know? And I think that when spaces are set aside for you, and they were supposed to be about that acknowledgement and that celebration and the representation of who you are, and not just who you are because you're fat, but your fat being a part of your life, that experience being a part of your life, but you being there's such a diverse array of people within fat bodies, you know, and so acknowledging that. But it's so, all of a sudden, when you are now, that space has been taken away from you, and you're now, like, on display for other people, and the way that they feel about your body becomes the center. And even if it's a positive thing in the moment, it's still reinforcing this idea that you're different. It's still reinforcing this idea that you are something to gawk at, that you're something that is not, that the way you're acting is not normal, when it is entirely normal. My experience in my body is normal, no matter what. It's the truth of my life, and I can't change that. Can I read you something?
Yeah.
Okay. So you actually found this article. it's called Messy. Body positivity means telling the whole truth and finally putting myself first. And we read this and we thought that this kind of applied to a lot of what we've been talking about here. It's by Najesty Kaudo. And in the first part of it, she says, when I think of body positivity, I think of Instagram. Plus size and disabled people radiating confidence through portrait photography and garnering thousands of likes with each post, which is great, but I can't do that. I won't do that. Instagram is shady. I've scoured the comments of plus size women's posts and seen the trolls commenting about how disgusting and unhealthy they think these bodies are, as well as the men fetishizing them for their size. And I'm going to add, as well as people, other people coming in and praising you for being an inspiration. She goes on to say, so I wonder how body positivity exists outside of Instagram and for people like me who know all their Instagram followers and only interact with a small percentage of them. I believe more than anything, body positivity is about truth. And it's hard for fat women and other people with fat bodies to embrace and publicize the truth, that truth, because it's hard for society to believe it. If enough people disregard your truth, you start believing the lie. The lie is that I'm unhappy, unhealthy, lazy, hypersexual, and desperate. Their truth, I'm fat, overweight, obese, too short to be this big, too smart to be so confident about being this big. I'm too much.
Yeah, I think that for me really sums up this idea between self-esteem and systemic oppression, because maybe for, you know, thin white people online, when they do start to believe that they're confident and they do start carrying that confidence that they've sort of cultivated for themselves by objectifying marginalized bodies for their improved self-esteem, as they carry that out into the real world, I think the world responds to their confidence in a positive manner. And so it sort of manifests this ripple effect where it's like, I started to believe it myself and now other people believe it and now all of my problems are okay. But the truth of the matter is, while yes, I did use Instagram sort of as a vehicle to finding my way back to my body and sort of cultivating this connection to my body that I'd lost a long time ago. The fact of the matter is that coming out into society, for me, people are not responding to my confidence with anything other than a question mark half the time.
Or like, oh my God, you're so confident. The backhanded compliment. It's like, how are you? I want to be just like you. And it's like, okay, I mean, at this point, my confidence isn't even a question. It's just something that, like, I've learned to have to be in order to live the life that I want, you know, and it's not for someone else. Like, my confidence is for me, and let it be for me.
I think that's
hard.
That's so interesting, though, is that, like, what part of ourselves gets to be ours? Like, even our confidence that we've, like, fought for despite people trying to change it or take it from us, or feeling as though they have to bless us with our confidence. You know, I just think it's really fascinating that, like, even that doesn't get to be ours.
So I think you wanted to read a little caption that you had.
Yeah. So again, we just really believe in the power of storytelling. We just think that so many of stories of marginalized people get lost, or they're altered, again, just within our existence. They're stripped of their value, of their specific value as it ties to a marginalized identity, in order to make the general population feel comfortable and proud of us or feel inspired by us. And so we really just want to get back to, like, the sort of raw storytelling where we're living within our truths. And so I wrote a little something as I was kind of talking about my body image to somebody. It was a thin white woman who was doing my hair. And I was at the moment talking about being fat, but we delved into something that was also tied to being Black. And so I kind of just journaled that experience. She looked at me and said, oh, that's not a Black thing. Don't make it a Black thing. Everybody struggles with loving and accepting ourselves. And in this moment, the image of this white hairstylist making disgruntled faces at my kinky hair began to fade. as did the sounds of her switching from brush to brush as she struggled to detangle my hair. In this moment, dismissed and disregarded, I shrank into myself, my voice stolen from me in this condescending exchange. I was silenced like an errant child, left alone with my thoughts and experiences. Everyone struggles. What an interesting way to universalize the human experience. There's a mild and flavorless truth in acknowledging everyone's fight. There's an ease in trying to make us all the same, silencing out the specific pains of one group, my people, feels at the hands of another group of people. It is calming to wash away the histories, the colors, the nightmares, and the intergenerational symptoms that coincide with that dynamic as one singular experience. It is easier. I can't deny that. But I didn't ask to be everyone. I didn't ask to be lost within the white experience of struggles and pain. I didn't ask to be swept away and discarded under this false pretense of care and solidarity. I am not everyone. Not everyone is subjected to performing a mental obstacle course as we imagine ourselves as protagonists in films, books, and advertisements that will never lead. Not everyone watches people who look exactly like them but brutalized by the police. Not everyone has to swallow and choke on that trauma, grief, and fear as a means of separating themselves from those victims just so we can survive and remain afloat in a sea of everyone else. Not everyone has to betray their brothers, uncles, and fathers in this way. Not everyone is offered solutions to lighten their skin, make their nose more narrow, burn their scalps to straighten their hair. Not everyone has to be reminded daily that their lives don't matter while facing a crowd of everyone else, angry pale faces, white people who've stolen our hairstyles, clothing, language, dancing, and our bodies, yelling out without abandon that all lives matter. Not everyone's peaceful protest is seen as a treacherous aggression towards national solidarity. Not everyone's grief is trivialized in the wake of familial trauma put on a public display for white consumption. My heart breaks for every Black mother who lost their baby and whose tears were used as gasoline to burn the hope that Black people have for racial justice. My experience in my body, as I try to remain connected to it, navigating this world will never be the same as everyone else. I am asking to be seen, my Blackness to be acknowledged as it intersects with my fat non-binary body. I am asking to exist fully outside of the confines of white expectations. My experiences, my grief, my struggles to be my own as they are echoed throughout the Black community. My pain isn't that of everyone, and there is beauty and validity in acknowledging the small variations, the nuances, and struggles that some of us experience while others don't. I bear this pain as an exoskeleton, part of me deeply connected to my body. This pain, these ideas, they are found within the fibers of my flesh, ingrained in my memory, and affecting every moment of how I understand, care for, and present my body. It is inescapable, this exoskeleton, and it is what everyone sees first and only, but it is not the best of me. It is not all of me, but it does house that which is most tender and inaccessible. And if I could have caught my breath and used my voice without it breaking, I would have told this white hairstylist, so confident in her assertion that my struggles with self-worth and body image weren't a Black thing, that she was wrong. Everyone else is wrong. Because if everyone else isn't Black, how would they know what it means to be othered in this way? How would they know what it means to be surrounded yet isolated? And if I were more emboldened, more brazen, I would have told her she could keep her everyone and the violence that their complicity, silence, whitewashing, and white centering has to offer. I would tell her that she is not colorblind because that assertion in of itself is a nasty rumor, eating away at the empathy of white people and consuming the histories of both triumph and sorrow that my people, Black people, have made in this country. It bleaches our unique pain and circumstances from the responsibility of white people, all of whom benefit from the hatred cast upon my body. After all, the absence of color is white.
Thank you all for tuning in today or this week. And we will be back next month with a brand new episode. Have a good day.